May it please the court, and good morning. My name is Matthew Stewart of Hopewell for appellant Charles Rankins. Judge, this case is out of the Circuit Court for the City of Petersburg, where Mr. Rankins was indicted on counts of second-degree murder and use of a firearm in the commission of that felony. Ultimately, he was convicted of voluntary manslaughter by a jury. The only issue before the court today is the trial court's refusal of a jury instruction on the defense of others. Counsel below submitted that instruction, which I would contend is a correct statement of law, but the trial court refused it. A jury instruction issue is, of course, tightly woven with the facts, and when viewing the facts in this case, we will be viewing them with the...
In this case, the trial court did provide a defense of self-defense instruction.
That is correct, yes, sir.
And I think everyone agrees in the context of sort of resolving this issue here that whether or not the instruction regarding defense of others would apply would depend upon certain facts and circumstances justifying that instruction in the context of what was going on. What facts would you point to here that would suggest that a defense of others instruction, and I'm assuming the defense of others would be the young person involved and possibly another person who's in the room, what facts and circumstances would you say justified the defense of others?
Well, Judge, in looking at the record in its entirety, we see that, first of all, the young person involved, the young girl, there's evidence in the record of some prior aggression and violence towards her, chasing her around the house in the dark with a knife, an incident where she was basically punished.
But we need imminent
yes, sir.
Danger for deadly force.
Right. I think in viewing in what Mr. Rankins, the appellant, observed, I think taking that as a prior context helps. The imminence of what happens immediately, shortly after the victim, Mr. Yore, pulled the gun on Mr. Rankins in the front yard, he then bursts into the house to forcibly take the girl away, as he told Mr. Rankins he was going to do. Outside, Mr. Rankins had tried to reason with him and said, no, Mr. Yore, you're not going to take the girl today. He then pulled a gun on him. Going inside, we see the same pattern begin to emerge.
He doesn't have the gun drawn inside the house, correct?
Not when he enters the house. In fact, he
draws it when your client comes out with a gun.
Mr. Rankins emerges with a gun, telling him to leave and telling him, you know, you pulled a gun on me, I think was his quote at the time. Mr. Yore is then pulling the gun out, and only then did Mr. Rankins begin firing, yes. I think in viewing the way Mr. Rankins would view it in his perception of the danger to the others in the room, he sees this man who's angry, who flew off the handle quickly when he was told that he wouldn't be taking the girl with him that day, enter the room with a gun, and then begin to have the same conversation with his family.
Would you agree that a reasonable interpretation of all these facts is that the dispute as it existed at that time was between your client and the other person, I forget his name right now.
Mr. Yore.
Yeah, Yuri and Rankins. That's who the dispute was between.
That's what the dispute we saw outside, yes, sir.
And then it sort of followed inside.
Yes, sir.
And the focus, once they got inside, seemed to be a discussion between what Yuri and Rankins were going to do to one another as opposed to what Yuri was going to do to the... Rankins were going to do to the little girl.
It all happened very quickly, but... He comes inside, and Monica Rankins, the grandmother of the little girl, tells Mr. Yore essentially the same thing that Mr. Rankins said outside.
And they're in an argument, right? A verbal
correct.
Exchange, but there's no blows, there's no violence
no, sir.
Between the grandmother and Mr. Yore.
That is correct.
No gun drawn at that point.
It didn't reach that point, no, sir. Outside, we had the confrontation, you're not going to take her.
And the girl is in the house somewhere, but not necessarily in this room.
I believe she was present in the room. I believe that record did reflect she was in the room.
Was there any overt act once Rankins entered the home regarding the girl?
Mr. Yore said to, it began with words, said to Monica Rankins that he would be taking the young girl with him that day.
Was there any overt act of violence, I guess would be a better way of putting it?
Until Mr. Yore began, Mr. Rankins came in with the small rifle, Mr. Yore began pulling his gun out. Exactly when Mr. Yore began pulling his gun out, it's never clear in the record, but when he fell, Monica Rankins testified that at that time she saw Mr. Yore had a gun in his hand. So it was not still holstered or still concealed or anything like that. By the time Monica realized that he had a gun, it was in his hand. There are two, I guess, cases that really speak to that imminent threat and whether or not the actions of the victim are imminent and threatening enough at the time to warrant giving a defense of other, or actually they speak to self-defense, but the standard is the same. And out of the Supreme Court would be Carey on one side and Sands on the other side. And the great difference in those two cases, both involving ladies who had endured years of abuse by a spouse and then eventually took that spouse's life in a final confrontation. One of them, the gentleman in Sands, the gentleman was laying in bed at the time, not doing anything when the lady shot him. And the other one, he was actually approaching her when he shot him. And I would argue that this case is much more similar to Carey, where he was being approached at the time, or she was being approached at the time when she shot.
The first case there was in the context of a battered partner case, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. They were both battered partner cases. In finding a fact pattern to give this court guidance, they were both very similar, and similar to this one, where there was an apparent cooling off between the aggression and the actual final act that took
place. But they're self-defense cases, not defense of others cases.
Yes, sir. They are both self-defense cases. The standard is the same. The jury instruction is modified only slightly to reflect.
I mean, there needs to be an other who has to be defended.
That is correct.
Who's under some kind of imminent danger,
right,
as opposed to, because your client did get the self-defense instruction.
Yes, sir. And the argument in this case is that both the young girl and perhaps family members inside who would be telling Mr. Yore that he could not take the young girl would be in danger from Mr. Yore. The way he had acted outside when the very same thing was said to him, he responded by pulling a gun on Mr. Rankins. It's Mr. Rankins' perspective in that, not the other potential victim's perspective, that matters. He had just seen this man when he told him that he would not be taking the young girl with him pull a gun on him and give some fighting words, so to speak. He then turns around and bursts inside to take the girl, and Mr. Rankins saw the same exchange begin to take place. You're not going to take her? Yes, I am. And before the final act of actually pulling the gun was taken care of, Mr. Rankins brought his own gun out and defended his family. And I think I've alluded to this already, but it doesn't really much matter what the victim saw, the potential victim saw. It's what Mr. Rankins saw, what Mr. Rankins felt. He perceived the imminent threat to his family, to the young girl, and he responded to that by coming to their aid and in an appropriate manner. Judge, if there's not much more, I'll close. I'll ask this court to reverse the trial court's decision and remand the case to the Circuit Court for the City of Petersburg.
Yes, sir.
Thank
we'll
you.
Reserve the rest of your time for rebuttal. Counsel.
Your Honor, may it please the court, David Uberman on behalf of the Commonwealth. The trial court did not err in this case in refusing Rankin's proffered instruction on the defense of others. As this court knows, the trial court has broad discretion in granting or refusing jury instructions, and the standard is whether there is more than a scintilla of evidence supporting that instruction.
So if we were to use that instruction or use that direction analytically to take a look at the circumstances here, I don't think anyone could argue that the foundation for the dispute between the parties involved in pulling guns on one another involves something related to the little girl in the case.
I agree, Your Honor.
Okay.
It does.
And there had been at least some indication in the record that there had been some acts of aggression toward this little girl.
There was a statement by the little girl to her grandmother, to her uncle, Mr. Rankins, who's the defendant, the appellant in this case, that Mr. Yore, some days prior, yes, had her, I believe she claimed he chased her around a dark house with a knife, and that this had come up because a cut was found on her hand, and she'd explained that she was forced to peel her own potatoes for dinner.
So if the record suggests that there is some act of violence and that there was a deadly weapon used, assuming the knife is considered a deadly weapon, and now you've got people who are in a confrontation and guns involved, why would you suggest that there is not more than a scintilla of evidence to support the theory that Pelham was in his right to think that not only he, and he got self-defense instruction, but also others were at risk of imminent bodily injury?
There are several reasons, Your Honor. I think the first is that, at least with respect to this knife, is the connection there is tenuous. The law is clear in that in order to be entitled to a defense of others instruction, the danger has to be imminent, has to be serious, has to be deadly. We're talking about an incident, at least involving the knife, that allegedly happened days before this. And I think the problem we run into
is... But it does provide some level of context.
It provides context, but it does not provide you couldn't simply walk up to someone and summarily execute them because they had chased someone with a knife the day before. And I certainly understand that's not what the court is implying. But what I'm trying to underscore is there was certainly a break in that chain of events, that happened days before. And here, in support of his argument, I think if the court were to read our respective arguments, it's almost as though two different sets of facts occurred. And I think what, in my humble opinion, I think Mr. Rankins de-emphasizes certain aspects of testimony to support that narrative of defense of others rather than having a defense that fits the actual narrative.
Zealous advocacy.
I know, and I respect that, and that's what the system calls for. But in this case, for example, today we heard that Mr. Urey burst into the house to forcibly take the girl away. Mr. Rankins argued that he did not testify to seeing Mr. Urey again conceal the weapon before turning away, but only saw him go inside the house where his family was waiting. And I think it's fair to say that these allegations create an inference that Mr. Urey, for lack of a better term, goes inside guns ablazing, and that's simply not what happened. And that inference is negated by Mr. Rankin's own testimony on cross-examination when he tells the prosecutor finally, no, I never saw a gun in his hand inside the house.
Let's invert that a little bit, if we could, just to sort of help us. If the trial judge had refused to give an instruction on self-defense, what would be your response?
I think my case would be a little bit more difficult, Your Honor, because I think the factual scenario that supported that self-defense instruction occurred outside of the home, and it was based upon Mr. Rankin's testimony. And as the court has heard today, Mr. Rankin's confronted Mr. Urey about his mistreatment of this young girl who he was a caregiver for, and that's what he was there to, it was per their schedule, per their arrangement, that he simply picked the child up at the end of the day. He was not coming, with a knife and some intent to harm the child. He was the boyfriend of the girl's mother. So in that sense, he was a caregiver. But, I just think this inference that, again, to answer your question with respect to self-defense, I think it's based upon Mr. Rankin's statements that Mr. Urey brandished a firearm in some way outside of the house and said, essentially, do you want to scrap? Do you want to fight? We know none of that happened because no fight occurred, no shooting occurred. What we do know is that Mr. Urey went inside the home, and again, by Mr. Rankin's own testimony, he never saw a gun in Mr. Urey's hand inside the home. By the grandmother's own testimony, who was in the kitchen, which is the room into which the front door opened, she says, yeah, I know that Mr. Urey has a gun, but I never saw one in his hand that day. She didn't see it until after her son had shot him five times.
So your view would be we would have a different case if outside the statement had been made, I'm coming in that house, and either I'm coming out with that girl or nobody's coming out.
Correct. And to the extent that there was any threat, it was on the part of Mr. Urey. It was directed outside, and it was directed specifically to Mr. Rankins. And I think that's why the court granted him a self-defense instruction. And as we know, the jury didn't buy it. Now, they did apparently see some mitigating evidence because he was charged with second-degree murder, but he was convicted of voluntary manslaughter. But they certainly didn't acquit him, so they didn't find any weight there. But I think that it's important to keep the actual testimony at the forefront. And what actually happened is Mr. Urey walked into the home and he engaged Mrs. Rankins, the grandmother, in a conversation. The verbs that she uses in her testimony, which are on pages 137, 138 of the transcript, are they were talking, they were telling. To the extent Mr. Urey had any confrontation whatsoever with anyone inside that home, to the extent we could even color it that way, it's when Mrs. Rankins, the grandmother, says, well, I was in the process of telling him that we wanted to keep the young girl with us for the night when he cut me off. And what she meant by that, and she explains further on pages 137, 138, is that he stopped her from talking. And at that point, what we had happened is in the meantime, Mr. Rankins, the defendant, walks into the home, walks right by Mr. Urey in the kitchen.
I think it's fair to say there was some kind of argument. I'm not saying it's a heated argument or anything, but when the grandma says she's keeping Aaliyah, then the victim, quote, gets smart with her. So I mean, that at least supports the notion that there's they're not just having a casual conversation. I mean, there's at least a disagreement.
Certainly, Your Honor. I think disagreement is a very fair word to use with respect to that situation. But again, a disagreement stands in very stark contrast to the predicate for a defense of others instruction, which is imminent harm, a reasonable imminent fear of substantive harm or death. And that simply, that disagreement...
And no lunging at either the grandmother or the child, no serious threats... towards either of them, correct?
Not in the slightest, Your Honor. And what happens is Mr. Urie, again, or Mr. Rankins, rather, allegedly, who is in fear that this armed individual is going to do some harm to his family, instead of confronting him as soon as he goes in the house, he walks right by him, goes into the back of the house, retrieves the rifle that we know from the grandmother's testimony he had earlier that day, and he waited hours for Mr. Urie to show up, and in his own mother's testimony, it was Mr. Rankins that confronted Mr. Urie outside. He was unarmed at the time. But essentially, I think the prosecutor was right when she said that Mr. Rankins essentially baited Mr. Urie. He came back with a rifle. He immediately raised it at Mr. Urie. He didn't say, "Get away from my family." He said, "You pulled a gun on me," and he repeated it twice. There was no indication whatsoever that Mr. Urie was going to do any harm to anyone in that room, other than possibly outside when it involved Mr. Rankins himself. And then Mr. Rankins, again, his testimony is, well, he aimed for his hands. Well, he shot him five times, the fatal one of which was right through the heart. So I think there is a lot to be questioned about Mr. Rankins' account. But I think what the evidence does bear without dispute is that once all the parties were inside, there was no confrontation, let alone, at most, I think we could say a verbal disagreement. There certainly was no physical threat. There certainly was no physical confrontation. And there certainly was no reasonable basis upon which Mr. Rankins could have believed that his family member...
Even if there's a violent argument or a loud argument... And even if there's pushing and shoving, which we don't have here, you're still not privileged to use deadly force.
Correct.
And at that point, you can intervene and use equivalent physical force, but the law is pretty careful about green-lighting the use of deadly violence.
I think that's absolutely correct, Your Honor. And in this case, it's unfortunate because one gentleman is dead, another gentleman's in jail, but this was brought about by Mr. Rankin's behavior inside of that home. You know, to his own mother, again, you know, by her own admission, says she never saw a gun in Mr. Urie's hand. Now, that's in stark contrast to this narrative that he burst into the home to forcibly remove the child. That's simply not what happened. To the extent that I would argue that there simply is no relevance, I agree. Perhaps it provides some context to how Mr. Rankins may have been feeling, or it may provide some context for his anger. But certainly Mr. Urie's actions, which again are premised upon what the young girl told them that day, occurred days before. And it sounds, you know, bizarre, I agree, but again, that just simply is not the basis for a defense of others instruction. And I think that Mr. Rankins' attempt to bootstrap that conduct that occurred days before, or to bootstrap that conduct that occurred outside the home and which was directed at Mr. Rankins himself, and to somehow cram that into a narrative justifying a defense of others' instructions is improper and is simply not supported by the facts of this case. And again, Mr. Rankins admitted he never saw the gun until after he shot Mr. Urie. He essentially, Mr. Rankins, that is, equates Mr. Urie's possession of the firearm with an intent to injure or kill those people inside the home, and that's simply not an inference that the law permits. If a jury instruction is not applicable to the facts and circumstances of the case, it simply shouldn't be given, because the purpose of the jury instruction is to inform the jury of the law with respect to their deliberations and their verdict. And in this case, I think the Petersburg Circuit Court acted appropriately in denying that instruction, because not only was there a lack of, it's going to be phrased very poorly, but a lack of more than a scintilla of evidence, there was simply no credible evidence in this case supporting the defense of others instruction. And for that reason, I respectfully ask that you affirm the trial court. And unless there are any other questions that the court has, I'll rest on the remainder of the argument as set forth on brief.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Judge, just to quickly address a few of counsel's points. With regard to two sets of facts, and with a proper jury instruction, we will view the facts in the light most favorable to the appellant. The proponent of the instruction, who is in this case the appellant. The appellant's facts were that, and he testified at trial, that he became scared for his family. I believe the appendix at 215 says that when Mr. Ure rushed into the house, he wasn't thinking about himself at that point. He was thinking about his family. No shooting or fight occurred outside. When the gun was pulled on him, he didn't confront Mr. Ure at that time because he was bringing fists to a gunfight, Judge. I mean, he wasn't exactly in a position to confront Mr. Ure at that point. He walked by him in the house because still he was unarmed and Mr. Ure was armed. To say the jury didn't buy the self-defense argument, Judge, while I won't concede that it was improper to instruct them on self-defense, I would say the defense of others, there's more evidence to support that than the self-defense, perhaps. The cooling off period when he left Mr. Rankins, the threat then became more focused upon the family that was inside by Mr. Rankins' testimony, that he wasn't thinking about himself anymore, he was thinking about people inside. And the fact that the jury convicted of manslaughter rather than murder shows a sympathy, perhaps, but some sort of understanding as to this fact scenario that was presented to them that day. Furthermore, if the jury is instructed on self-defense, but there's the defense of others instruction is conspicuously absent, then they're essentially being told that you can consider the fact that Mr. Rankins may have been in danger, but not Monica Rankins.
Or
not the
were you trial counsel?
I was a second chair judge. I was not lead counsel and did not try the case.
During the deliberations, was there ever any question from the jury regarding defense of others or anything that the jury may have suggested based upon their deliberation the case that would suggest that they had thought about the defense of others?
Judge, I do not recall. I don't recall a question coming back. I do remember deliberations were very brief, inside of a half an hour. They came back very quickly. My argument in that case would be that they saw that they could acquit based on self-defense. They did not see a reason for an acquittal based on defense of others, and their next best bet was to go with a voluntary manslaughter
basically,
conviction.
Basically, your view would be that they apparently found that there was an unlawful killing, but it didn't rise to the point of murder.
Yes, sir. That would be my argument. And they were, I believe, based on the evidence, entitled to hear law on defense of others and did not hear that, and their response was to do the next best thing, so to speak. Finally, Judge, with regards to the conduct outside, I think that the Supreme Court's ruling in Carey, particularly, and in Sands, both said that you couldn't view the facts in isolation. You couldn't view that last moment view that last moment as an indication of what Mr. Rankins was thinking or what he was feeling. There was a pattern. There was behavior that was outside. There was behavior from days before. There was a series of behaviors that led to him taking the action he did. Working based on the last moment itself may not have been enough for a defense of others instruction, but I would ask the court to look at the record in its entirety and see that there was enough action by Mr. Ure prior to that final moment that would cause Mr. Rankins to be in fear for his family's life. Judge, for those reasons, if there are no further questions, I'll again ask this court to reverse the decision of the Petersburg Circuit Court and remand the case to that.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Case submitted. We'll come down to brief counsel.